Welcome to the Adam Schefter Podcast, and a belated Happy New Year to everybody across the country as the NFL rung in the new year in the only way that the league can, with a fury of activity, with chaos across the National Football League, with mass signings, trades, moves, nonstop transactions from the moment the league began. And today, we are going to be joined by one of the men who moved teams. We'll be joined by the now former Tennessee Titans All-Pro running back Derrick Henry, who last week signed a two-year, $16 million deal worth up to $20 million with the Baltimore Ravens. If ever there were a perfect team for Derrick Henry, this would be it. And he now will be paired up with Lamar Jackson, potentially forming the most dangerous backfield in the National Football League. And we will talk to Derrick Henry about his decision to sign with Baltimore and what it means. And when we talk about all the activity last week, this always is the single busiest week of the NFL year. And it started really the Thursday before the new league year began, which would be Thursday, March 7th, when Jalen Johnson re-signed with the Chicago Bears. And then the next day, Friday, Justin Madubuike signed with the Baltimore Ravens on a nearly $100 million deal, which got us into the weekend and into the flurry of activity. On Saturday, quiet Saturday, the Denver Broncos traded Jerry Jeudy to the Cleveland Browns. Chris Jones signed a record deal with the Kansas City Chiefs to become the highest paid defensive tackle in National Football League history. And when everybody woke up on Sunday morning, the New England Patriots had traded their former first round pick, Mac Jones, to the Jacksonville Jaguars, before later in the afternoon, Baker Mayfield re-signed a three-year, $100 million deal with the Buccaneers. And then that night, before we headed into the Monday, the start of the legal tampering and negotiating period, Russell Wilson signed a one-year deal for the Pittsburgh Steelers, where they're paying him only $1.2 million. That gets us into Monday and the start of the negotiating period. And amongst a flurry of moves, the ones that stood out were these. Kirk Cousins signing with the Atlanta Falcons. Saquon Barkley going to the Philadelphia Eagles. Josh Jacobs leaving the Raiders to go to the Green Bay Packers. We saw that day the Carolina Panthers trade their franchise player, Brian Burns, to the New York Giants. We saw Austin Eckler go to the Washington Commanders. It was a nice, quiet Monday for the National Football League. On Tuesday, we saw the Bengals trade Joe Mixon to the Houston Texans. So Marcus Mariota go to the Washington Commanders. We saw Derrick Henry, who will join us here in a matter of moments, go from Tennessee to Baltimore. We saw Patrick Queen go from Baltimore to Pittsburgh. We saw Danielle Hunter, maybe the top-ranked defensive free agent, sign with the Houston Texans. We saw the Steelers trade Deontay Johnson to the Carolina Panthers. That was Tuesday. On Wednesday, a quieter day after all the moves of Monday and Tuesday, the Jets traded for the Ravens offensive tackle, Morgan Moses. We saw Calvin Ridley sign with the Tennessee Titans. We saw Joe Flacco signed with the Indianapolis Colts, the comeback player of the year, which led us into Thursday when the Lions officially extended the contracts of their head coach, Dan Campbell, and their general manager, Brad Holmes, where we saw the Atlanta Falcons trade quarterback Desmond Ridder to the Arizona Cardinals and the Washington Commanders trade Sam Howell to the Seattle Seahawks. Before that night, Keenan Allen was traded to the Chicago Bears and Hollywood Brown signed with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, which took us into Friday when the Steelers traded Kenny Pickett, which opened up a whole lot of things that we'll get into the podcast, to the Philadelphia Eagles. We saw the Vikings package picks to get two first-round picks, one from the Houston Texans. Vikings now in a great spot. We'll get to that. And we saw the retirement of arguably the best defensive player of this century, Aaron Donald, walking away from the game, leading us into Saturday when the Chicago Bears traded Justin Fields to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a conditional 2025 sixth-round draft pick. And that basically was how the league opened the year. Always nice and quiet, always a lack of activity, always a lack of things to talk about. Nobody doles out storylines quite like the National Football League. We didn't hit on every story that happened. Certainly, there were literally hundreds, but those were some of the headliners from this past week that essentially evolved as the NFL celebrated its new year. And to ring in the new year, we're going to bring in my friend, the co-host of the Fantasy Football Podcast, Daniel Dopp, who will lead us on this week's Weekly Six Pack.
Adam, your sarcasm meter is maxed out today. Just a really quiet start to free agency. No big deal. Just like usual. Hey, man, I got a bunch of really fun questions. Let's start it off. Topic number one for the six pack. You just listed a bunch of things that have happened over the start of the new league year. But what was the most surprising development of free agency in your estimation?
Well, Daniel, when I looked at it, honestly, I knew that we would get some quarterback movement. But the amount of quarterback movement, to me, was staggering, right? Like, just think about it. Jimmy Garoppolo to the Rams, Justin Fields to the Steelers, Kenny Pickett to the Eagles, Sam Howell to the Seahawks, Desmond Ridder to the Cardinals, Joe Flacco to the Colts, Gardner Minshew to the Raiders, Sam Darnold to the Vikings, Drew Lock to the Giants, Jacoby Brissett to the Patriots, Mac Jones to the Jaguars, Kirk Cousins to the Falcons, Russell Wilson to the Steelers, Jameis Winston to the Browns, Tyler Huntley to the Browns, Marcus Mariota to the Commanders, Tyrod Taylor to the Jets, Mason Rudolph to the Titans, Mitchell Trubisky to the Bills. Like, when do we get that much quarterback movement? Ordinarily, it's great. Josh Dobbs to the 49ers on Monday night. Like, it just keeps coming. And I think this past year, we had 66 different starting quarterbacks. I think teams put an emphasis on the fact that they needed either a new starter or somebody that they believed in as a backup, because the overwhelming chances are that at some point in time, every team is going to need a backup quarterback. But the amount of quarterback movement, teams changing up their signal callers, was incredible to me. Didn't expect it to be that quick. Didn't expect it to be that sudden and dramatic, but it was wild, the quarterback changes that have happened over the course of the past week.
Yeah, I feel like free agency, we see a lot of other positions move far more often, but this last week was just unbelievable from a quarterback perspective. And I wonder how much has to do with the idea that so many quarterbacks got hurt and we were looking for backup and depth options within the NFL, making sure that teams have guys set up in case anything happens to their starter. All right, topic number two, Adam Schefter. Speaking of quarterbacks, talk to me about the Steelers. They brought in Russell Wilson to be their quarterback, and then they traded, you mentioned it, for Justin Fields for a conditional sixth-round pick that could turn into a fourth based on playing time, but because they just added Russell Wilson, it doesn't feel like they're going to get that level of playing time out of Justin Fields. So talk to me about this move and why the Steelers made it for both of these QBs.
Well, here's what you have to remember, Daniel. If we had gone into the offseason and I had said to you that the Pittsburgh Steelers would be able to get Russell Wilson and Justin Fields for essentially a conditional 2025 sixth round draft pick while paying Russell Wilson $1.2 million, what would have been your reaction? Like, every team in the league should be doing that.
Absolutely.
I know that it's going to be a little bit of a crazy quarterback situation that they've tried to defuse already by saying that Russell is the number one, Justin Fields is the clear backup. But here's what I've heard when I've talked to people around the league, executives and other teams. And again, we're just throwing out hypotheticals. Russell Wilson is the starter. He is expected to be the starter. We know that. But what if this summer, Justin Fields goes in and outplays Russell Wilson? What if he is the better quarterback? The Pittsburgh Steelers, if they wanted, could either trade Russell Wilson to another team. They could cut him before the season begins if they don't see what they want. They have a nominal investment in him, $1.2 million in guaranteed money. Who cares what it is, because you're just assuring that you have a quarterback. You're just paying up to make sure that the quarterback position is taken care of. So between Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, they've done it. Now, look, there's a real possibility that both are going to be there. That is the overwhelming chance. But they have options. If they have to trade Justin Fields, fine. If they have to trade Russell Wilson, fine. If they have to cut Russell Wilson, fine. There's a lot of ways this can go. They're saying Russell Wilson's the starter, Justin Fields the backup. We'll take them at their word, and that is the way it's going to be. But that doesn't mean that's how it's going to be when the season opens, or when we get to the midway point of the season. There's a lot of ways that this can go, but they've remade their quarterback room. They have their offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith. We know that Mike Tomlin's a big Justin Fields fan. That has been talked about for a while. So let's just see how it plays out. They've given themselves options and let the quarterbacks go out and prove who deserves to play and who deserves to be there.
Yeah, really interested to see how this is going to work out. And I'm totally with you, Adam. If you can find a way to make your team better by trading a sixth round draft pick, Why would you not do that? Those are not guys that are guaranteed to make your roster. I mean, take that thing. The idea of what you have there, I think, is very interesting for the Steelers. And I'm going to very excited to see how that quarterback situation is going to work out as we get into the season. All right. Topic number three, Adam Schefter. Talk to me about this Vikings trade. They move back into the first round. They now got two first round picks. What does this trade tell you?
Trade tells me that the Vikings are in the quarterback market, that they are poised to strike again. They have picks 11 and picks 23. And as it was told to me, the Texans were the ones who went to the Vikings to propose this trade. And the Vikings were only too happy to have two first round picks, which enables them to move further up in the draft, should and when they need to go pick the quarterback that they want. Now, people have said, how high are they going to go? Well, who's going to go number two? We expect Caleb Williams to be one. Then Washington would be on the clock. And if they don't pick the quarterback that Minnesota wants, maybe Minnesota tries to go up as high as number three. Maybe they try to go up to number two to take it off the board, to make it a moot point. Maybe they try to sit back and leapfrog the Giants, who are at number six, and go to Arizona at four or the Chargers at five. Like, there's a lot of ways the Vikings can do this, but they now have the wherewithal, the striking capacity to move up to go get the quarterback, whoever that is, that they deem to be the Kirk Cousins replacement. Like, there are some teams that have made some dramatic moves. We talked about the Steelers and what they've done to their quarterback room. Vikings, too. I mean, they lose a guy that was the glue of the team in Kirk Cousins. They bring in Sam Darnold on a one-year deal worth up to $10 million. And now we fully expect that they're going to be drafting a quarterback. We just don't know which one and how high it'll be. But I'd be surprised if somehow the Vikings don't come out of the first round of the draft with a quarterback.
Man. Well, being able to move back up into the first round, get those extra assets, really helps. Excited to see what they're going to do there. Topic number four, Adam Schefter. All this news around quarterbacks. I mean, we've been talking about it. And yet, in Dallas, Dak Prescott, entering the final year of a four-year, $160 million contract, only gets a restructure. What's going on there with Dak and the Cowboys?
Daniel, every year there's a story that hangs over the National Football League that just lingers out there, that gives GetUp and SportsCenter and NFL Live all the content that they want for the next year. Well, this is that story, Dak's quarterback contractual situation. Because this past week, they essentially restructured his contract just to create about $4 million in cap spaces, our friend Field Yates pointed out. But the fact of the matter is, the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, to my knowledge, have not had any meaningful, substantial, significant discussions aimed at a contract extension to keep Dak in Dallas long term. His deal is up after this year. Not only is it up after this year, but his cap number now is over $55.5 million. So Dak is headed into the last year of his contract. Mike McCarthy's headed into the last year of his contract. Mike Zimmer, their defensive coordinator, is on a one-year deal, I believe. They got a lot of people with their back up against the wall contractually, which I think is how Jerry Jones, the owner, likes it. But the Cowboys cannot trade Dak. He's got a no-trade clause. They cannot tag him so he can leave in free agency. And if and when he does leave in free agency, they would have to carry $95 million in dead cap charges over the next 2 years, spread out how they want. So we are looking at a situation where the Dallas Cowboys, if they don't get their quarterback signed, are poised to lose him in free agency, where he becomes what Kirk Cousins was when he left Washington to hit the open market in his prime. The other issue here is, even if they wanted to redo Dak's contract today, Daniel, today, to create the salary cap space that they need, guess what? They lost out on all the free agents who signed within the last 10 or so days. They're off the market. So there's no need to redo that now, other than to keep them long term. Why they didn't restructure before the start of the league year, before all the moves were made, I don't understand, other than they don't seem to be right now committed to Dak long term. And he's sitting there like anybody in any business heading into the last year of his or her contract. If your company's not coming to you and talking to you, you're wondering, Where am I going to be next? So I'm just telling you, this is the story that's going to hang over the Dallas Cowboys and the National Football League for the next year until if and when Dak Prescott becomes a free agent with the ability to go choose a new team to leave Dallas in a situation where the Cowboys then would have to come up with a new franchise quarterback. And I don't know who that is, but this will be interesting in the draft to see if and how high they go quarterback in the draft to begin to groom a potential successor to Dak if he leaves. But I'm just telling you, this is a powder keg of content for shows at ESPN because it's just sitting there waiting to happen with Dak Prescott in his lame duck contract year and Mike McCarthy in his lame duck contract year and Mike Zimmer in his lame duck contract year and the Cowboys sitting back and waiting to see whether they want to reward these guys for a big year, if that's what they have, or let them go if it's not a big year. But here comes the Dallas Cowboys, who are always a huge story with even bigger storylines than we've seen in any recent year.
Yeah, I feel like any story that is related to the Dallas Cowboys is just always a little bit bigger with Jerry Jones looming over top of it. All right, Adam Schefter, topic number five. Let's talk about Arik Armstead, who reunites with Trent Baalke, signed a 3-year contract worth $51 million. Adam, how wild is this?
You know, in free agency, you get a lot of people that promise a lot of things. Some deliver, some don't. Some teams make agreements that they keep. Mm. Most of them keep. Some players make agreements that they keep. Some don't. It goes on and on. I always say this is a week in which people's character is really revealed. And Arik Armstead at one point had what I think he thought was an agreement with the Houston Texans and flew down to Houston only to find out when he landed that the Houston Texans were going to go sign Danielle Hunter instead. And the discussions that they were having affected that deal. And so that deal was off. So Arik Armstead then had to go find a new home. And he did. Mm-hmm. He found a new home in Buffalo. And they had the framework of an agreement in place where he would go to Buffalo. But then someone stepped in with a better offer. And Jacksonville got a deal done. And so Arik Armstead might be the only player in free agency this year that had the frameworks of three different agreements with three different teams. First Houston, then Buffalo, then finally Jacksonville, where he goes and is reunited with the man that drafted him in San Francisco, the Jaguars general manager, Trent Baalke. And it is, to me, symbolic of the way that the week works in many ways. People say things and do other things. People intend to do one thing and do another. People tell you they'll do this and they do that. And Arik Armstead, to me, is the biggest symbol of what can and sometimes does happen during the week of free agency with, again, the framework of agreements with three different teams.
Gosh, that is crazy. I can't imagine feeling like I've got something locked up for my career and then I land on an airplane and find out, oh, just kidding, you're going to have to go figure something else out. Like, there's the up and down nature of what is free agency, Adam, I can only imagine. All right, topic number six, closing out the six-pack here. Aaron Donald, one of the best defensive players in my lifetime that I can remember watching, has decided to hang up his cleats, calling his retirement. Adam, just talk to me about what you remember about Aaron Donald and his time in the NFL.
Well, you know, here's the funny thing, Dave. I'm sitting in the spot in my home office right now where I was in July of 2014 when I got a text that said, in training camp, man, Aaron Donald is unreal. That was the exact text. And I got the text and I put it out on Twitter. And I remember putting it out there and looking at some of the comments back then, which I went through the other day as I saw that tweet after Aaron Donald announced his retirement, and we could reflect on a guy who had been to 10 Pro Bowls and an 8-time All-Pro and won the Defensive Player of the Year and helped the Rams to a Super Bowl. He was everything they thought he was from the moment they saw him. He was who we thought he was, as Dennis Green would say, okay? He was a wrecking ball, a human wrecking ball. And when I put out that tweet, some of the comments were incredible. The first comment was from none other than Chris Mortensen. And after I said that Aaron Donald is unreal, Mort commented in the tweet, "Got a feeling many teams will regret passing on him." The great Chris Mortensen knew. He knew. And then there were other people who basically were coming at me. A Blake Freeman, July 26, 2014. "It's training camp. Get off his d-." Okay, Blake Freeman. "He might be good, but not as good as Dominique Easley. Easley is the most underrated player from this draft. Teams will regret not picking him." Okay. Another one. "He won't be anything special. Way too undersized to have success." Another one. "Nah, he was a reach. Too small. Will never be consistently good. Will be on the street working at Taco Bell in 2017.
Wow.
All right. Another one. "We talk about practice. What are we talking about here, man? Not the game that I love we're talking about. Allen Iverson." Yep. "Everyone on every team is unreal in July. Next, according to Kells." Another one. "Didn't people say that about Ron Dayne?" And another one that says, "Long term, he'll have a shorter time in the NFL than Andrew Luck and leave less of an impact." So those are some of the comments that were coming in. But all we can say is that the Rams knew early. Everyone knew early. Aaron Donald was who we thought he was. He had an incredible career. And now the Rams have to find a way to replace one of the greatest defensive players in NFL history, who showed it from the day he arrived in training camp when the text came in that Aaron Donald is unreal. You know who else has been unreal? Derrick Henry. And Derrick Henry last week signed with the Baltimore Ravens, a 2-year deal worth $16 million up to $20 million. And the fact of the matter is, and we're going to talk about this with him as well, he nearly became a Baltimore Raven close to the trade deadline last year. The Titans and Ravens were having trade discussions. They were close to an agreement before Tennessee backed away. That was one of the many topics that we wanted to address with the new Ravens running back, the Pro Bowl running back, the now Baltimore Ravens running back, Derrick Henry. So, Derrick, it has now been almost a week since you signed with the Baltimore Ravens. And I'm just curious to know how that has changed your life and the differences it has made so far.
Well, I'll tell you the good news and the settles in for me. My phone has finally stopped ringing. Text messages has calmed down. The Twitter messages and the Instagram messages have finally calmed down. So that was an exciting time, but very thankful for the opportunity from the Baltimore Ravens, the whole organization, on the Steve, Eric, John Harbaugh, and the whole entire team for the great welcome I had last week, and just thankful for the opportunity, and want to do my part on my end for sure.
What was the coolest message, text, or call you got in the days after you decided to go to Baltimore?
I wouldn't point out a particular text or message. I think I was just shocked about how many people I got messages from, just like constantly, nonstop. It was kind of like they were sitting there waiting, like just to, you know, to see where I was going, anticipating it for a while. And once the news broke, it was like all hell broke loose, which I'm very thankful for. And I appreciate all the love, and I got love for everybody that sent out a text message or called me to congratulate me. It's very blessed to have those friendships and those relationships with the people that reached out to be able to, you know, take their time out of their day to send me a text or give me a call.
Now, I thought it was very cool. You showed up in Baltimore wearing a purple suit, a black shirt, and a black tie, which most people thought were the Ravens colors, which they are, but it was also the suit that you wore to your grandmother's funeral. What did that mean to you to be able to put on that suit that day with the relationship you had with her and how much she meant to you, Derrick?
Yeah, it was like a perfect match. You know, they told me I was going to have the presser that Thursday after we agreed on Tuesday and flew out Wednesday. So it was a quick turnaround. And once they asked if I could wear a suit, I was like, I got a perfect suit. Purple, Ravens purple, black shirt, black tie. I was like, it's a perfect combination of both sides. And like I said in the presser, we were in the process of moving. So everything was in boxes. Stuff was in storage, and the box that suit was in storage. So I went in storage, was throwing stuff around. It was organized, not organized anymore. But I was able to find the suit and got my tie. And the Ravens actually had John, who works for the Ravens, actually helped me out and got me a black shirt because I couldn't find it in time because we had a flight. So it all tied in together. And yeah, the last time I wore it was her funeral because her favorite color was purple. And she played a big part in raising me and, you know, mold me into the person I am today and the things she's taught me growing up as a kid. Now being an adult, I would definitely instill in my kids and still do to this day. And, you know, I just wanted to recognize her. And then also, like I said, in the pressure show Flock Nation that, you know, it's time to go and I'm locked in and I'm on board.
Now, how come you wore the purple suit to her funeral? What was the significance of that, Derek?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It was that was her favorite color. When I was a little boy, she'd always wake up like 6 o'clock in the morning and make me breakfast and make her coffee, and we'll go sit on her porch, and I'd always ask her tons of questions. She'd answer every single one of them. And I remember asking her when I was a little boy, what was her favorite color? She said violet purple. And whenever she passed. And I just went back to that moment. I was like, I'm gonna wear a violet purple suit to honor her at her funeral. And then the Ravens thing went down, and it was just a perfect match that went together.
So what do you think it would mean to her to see you dressed in that violet purple for your next NFL home?
Yeah, now you ask that, it's so funny because, like I said in the presser again, the day before free agency, well, the tampering period had started. We were outside playing in my backyard, and we've been here for like 2 years, and you know, we never seen any butterflies around here, not one. And we were sitting back there just chilling. My daughter's playing, I was playing with her. A black butterfly just flew all around me, and I usually see them in Tennessee. We had one time where I think I was leaving the house, and one just landed on me and sat on me, and she loved butterflies. When she was living, and once that happened, I just knew that, you know, everything is gonna happen the way it's supposed to. Don't get too overwhelmed. Just enjoy the process, and where I'm meant to be, I will be. And yeah, man, it was kind of like a beautiful little story to tell, to share that moment, to, you know, remind people, even though your loved ones are not physically here, but they always show you signs they're always around.
Pretty cool. Now. Yeah. You are aware of the fact that you almost were a Baltimore Raven during the season this past year, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
What do you know about that? Because I remember waiting for that trade to get done. There have been talks between the two sides, and it sounded like Tennessee decided to pull back from the talks for whatever reason and not go forward with a deal. But Baltimore had interest in acquiring you during the season this past year. What do you know about that, Derek?
Yeah, when that process was going on around the trade deadline, you know, I just kept seeing stuff on the internet. People were texting me, asking me questions, what's going on, which I didn't have the whole information, but just talking to my agent Todd and trying to figure out, you know, what was going on and what I had to look forward to as far as like the whole process, if it was going to happen, if it was not going to happen. I knew there were talks. I knew that I felt like progress is being made, but at the same time, I haven't really talked to nobody in the organization about anything. So, you know, I want to do that, have clarification on what could possibly happen and, you know, what their vision was like of what they wanted to do and what it looked like, and had conversations that went down, which I appreciated being able to communicate with the higher ups in the Titans organization. And, you know, it didn't go through. But, you know, during the whole process, it felt like I was going to be a Baltimore Raven. But at the end, they decided not to. But everything happens the way it's supposed to. I'm a Baltimore Raven now, and I couldn't be more happier.
So what was it like for you to become a free agent and to have some of these running backs flying off the shelf the first day? Like we see Saquon Barkley go to Philadelphia and Tony Pollard go to your former team, Tennessee, and DeAndre Swift to Chicago and Josh Jacobs to Green Bay. And meanwhile, you're waiting to get a deal done. What was that like for you to be a free agent and watch some of these deals get done?
Yeah, well, for far as my situation, I wasn't really like I wasn't trying to get too overwhelmed. I knew that moment would come when it was supposed to come. I wasn't trying to get too worked up about it. But as far as the other backs, I was actually happy. I thought it was kind of cool, you know, from us going from into the season, you know, stating our opinion on what a running back market is and the value of the running back position, trying to fight for everything that we can get, you know, as far as the group and forming that message and us trying to do something collectively to, you know, start something to be able to have a better market overall for the running backs and the guys that are behind us. So when I seen Saquon go and Josh, I thought that was cool. And they got what they felt like was their worth. And I was happy for every single guy to finally get their share of due. And hopefully it continues. And I feel like teams want to get away from it and not acknowledge the running back. But I felt like this free agency, they were like, well, we still have hope that these backs that are on the market can change the game and are generational special backs.
It was totally opposite of free agency last year. It seems like nobody wanted running backs. And then this year, everybody was in on running backs.
Yeah, see? So hopefully that's a good sign for the near future.
Right? That was pretty cool the way that all worked out. What will you remember, your big takeaway about playing in Tennessee?
They the one that gave me an opportunity when 31 other teams passed on me twice. Very thankful for them making my dream come true. Through all the 8 years, they, you know, stuck with me through my ups and downs. You know, when it was the bumps in the roads for me to finally to reach my full potential and have the success that I've had. Blessed for the whole journey. Thankful to land that organization, a first-class organization who has great people who treat the players right, make sure we have everything we need from top to bottom, from the kitchen staff, from the coaches, the trainers, the strength and conditioning coaches, the equipment people, even the janitors. I mean, the whole organization, I cannot say enough about every single person in that building. And the great honor, Miss Amy Adams Strunk, and for her giving me opportunity and what she's done for my family, very thankful for that as well. The fans, they have great fans, very supportive. And they just want to be able to, you know, support a team that's doing something special and building towards, you know, winning the championship, and, you know, very upset and, you know, hurt that I couldn't be able to do that in my 8 years there. But thankful for what I was able to do to help that organization in a pivotal time where, you know, they were on the down, and, you know, being able to bring them back up and, you know, do some great things there. I'll always have Nashville will always hold a special place in my heart. I still have the soccer team there, so, you know, I'll be around there every now and then. And like I said in the speech I gave after the game, the greatest 8 years of my life, because through those 8 years I've grown as a person and a player, and a lot has happened to mold me to where I am today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any eight-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature eight-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be. And now, as we look ahead to your time in Baltimore, what do you envision for your upcoming season with the Ravens? What's in your mind for how this is going to play out, Derek?
Yeah, it's going to be different. Going to be new. But I'm excited for change. Change is good sometimes, and we all need it, and we all need to see something different. I feel like this is a great organization that fits my style of play. I think as far as how they play and how the organization is and the culture that's built there, I think we think the same way, have the same mindset. Excited to be a part of that team and be an adding piece to help them win games and hopefully further on and go to the playoffs and do something special there and hopefully win the championship. To play with Lamar Jackson, who's a dynamic player, who's one of not the best player in the league, and play with explosive and playmakers on both sides of the ball. They have great leadership. Roquan Smith over there, Mark Andrews, Pat, Zay Flowers, who's coming off a great rookie season, Medibuke, who just got paid, who's a great player as well. I can go on and on, but I think the biggest thing is earning their respect from all my teammates by the way I work, by the way I carry myself, my leadership, and doing all those things to have production when the season comes around. But right now, it's just focus on getting ready, and then when that time comes, show them that I'm ready to work and earn their respect.
Let me say this. I know you spent 8 seasons in Tennessee, and they were 8 Hall of Fame-type seasons, and one day you'll go to Canton, Ohio, in my mind. But if ever there was a player born to play for one team, you, to me, are a Baltimore Raven. You look like you were born to play for that franchise, Derek. The way that they play, the way that you play, that to me seems like a perfect marriage.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I've heard that a lot over this past few days and the weekend as well. Agency had an event for everybody that works for A1, and a lot of players came out. And when the trade talk was going on, people were like, man, you kind of fit. I could see you playing there. You know, I've been in Tennessee so long, so many people couldn't see me anywhere else. But when the Baltimore thing came up, people started like, man, I could see you fitting there. And I feel like it's a perfect match as well.
Not kind of fit. You do fit. And I want to thank you very much for the time. It's been a tremendous amount of fun to watch you through 8 seasons. And I know a lot of people are looking forward to seeing what you do in your new home in the purple and black, which seems like it was destined to be, Derek.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it, and I hope I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Derek. Appreciate your time today. Just feels like Derek Henry is where he was supposed to be, wearing what he was supposed to be, paying tribute and honoring his grandmother's memory, and now forming a incredible tandem with Lamar Jackson, but also with Keaton Mitchell, because you can come at this with thunder and lightning, where Keaton Mitchell is really fast and Derrick Henry's really big and strong. And that is a tough running back combination that other teams are going to have this upcoming season. And that's why, honestly, the Baltimore Ravens come out of free agency as a winner, which gets us to Daniel Dopp. Daniel, because you had said you had some quick fire questions on winners and losers of free agency.
That's right, Adam Schefter. I kind of wanted to close it out this way because, listen, I would love to know all the information that you know, but you're as plugged in as it gets within the NFL. So you know all the inner workings of how this works when a player changes teams, what teams are looking for. So I wanted to ask you a couple quick questions. Rapid fire. Number one, which team do you think had the best free agency after week one? Is there a team that stands out to you?
Well, I love what Atlanta did because, if you solidify the quarterback position, that's everything. And they did. The Pittsburgh Steelers went shopping in the flea market, basically, and solidified the quarterback position for cheap. But the Atlanta Falcons, when you lock it up with Kirk Cousins and you can take your quarterback position and upgrade it like that, to me, you become a winner. There's going to be other winners, of course, here that emerge, Daniel, but the Atlanta Falcons stand out as a real winner to me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you being able to get somebody to help those young assets. All right, which team do you think missed the mark in free agency? Maybe had big plans but wasn't able to get them done. Is there a team that you think could have done better?
Well, Daniel, I'll go back to our conversation on the Dallas Cowboys. They lose Tony Pollard. They lose other players. Leighton Van Der Esch retires, and they're sitting there with a really good roster and just not doing anything. And so when you can get a Dak restructure extension done, and then use some of that space to strengthen your team when you're supposed to be all in, that's what I want to see. Everybody was talking about, what is Dallas doing? What is Dallas? And the answer is nothing. They did nothing. Nothing. So most teams, you think, got better. They tried to get better. They spent money to get better. Dallas really didn't spend anything. They re-signed their long snapper. That's about it. And so to me, you wonder how that will impact the Cowboys. That's the team you wonder about when you talk about teams that didn't make the moves that they needed to.
Totally. Adam, was there a favorite signing for you, a player that either went to the right place or you just felt like the deal was so good that this is the one that stands out to you, the Adam Schefter signing of the offseason?
Well, I do think, as I said to Derrick Henry, he was meant to be a Baltimore Raven, and I love that one. Saquon Barkley in Philly can have the same type of effect, I believe, that Christian McCaffrey had for the 49ers. When Christian McCaffrey got traded from Carolina, remember, people were kind of writing him off. He looked like he was slowing down, got to San Francisco, and boom, turned back into Christian McCaffrey. I think Saquon Barkley has got the potential to do that for the Philadelphia Eagles this season, turn it up, and raise and elevate Philadelphia in the process of doing that.
Yeah, him going there feels like it's just making the rich richer, Adam, which, to be honest, from a fantasy perspective, I'm still excited about. Love getting Saquon on a better team with some more weapons. But boy, that NFC is going to be tough. I'll tell you what. All right, last one from me. Any signings that shocked you or surprised you as a part of this? You can't believe that someone went to this team or that this deal came out.
Well, I was surprised that Robert Hunt, who is a guard that played in Miami, who went to Carolina, signed a 5-year, $100 million contract with $63 million guaranteed. If I had said to you 2 weeks ago, Daniel, who is Robert Hunt? You would not have been able to identify him. Most people wouldn't have. And I saw the money that went around for guards. Kevin Dotson gets $16 million in LA with the Rams. Jonah Jackson, your former Lions guard, he got huge money from the Rams. The Rams beefing up the center line. So I think some of the money for guards, that surprised me. Usually teams covet tackles and invest in tackles and raise the price on tackles. And this year, again, Robert Hunt, and I know he's a very good player, got $100 million. And that to me is fascinating on so many levels.
Yeah. I am with you on that. Adam, this is one of those things. We are just a little bit into free agency. We're going to continue to have moves, but it's just fun to talk about teams and players, guys moving to new places, trying to figure out what are they going to look like in 2024. I think free agency is one of those things that, like, it's just fun to be able to have something to live vicariously through until we get to have real football back.
Well, Daniel, I appreciate the winners and losers questioning. I appreciate the weekly six pack. We want to thank Derrick Henry for taking some time out of his schedule to join us now that he's a Baltimore Raven. I want to thank my great producer, Christina Buswell, for putting together this podcast and making it sing the way that it did. You too, Daniel Dot, for leading this on the six-pack journey, the winners and losers, and you, the listener, for tuning into another Adam Schefter podcast. We'll be back in this spot next week from the owners' meetings in Orlando, Florida, with more insights, information, and interviews. Until then, have a great week. Be well, stay safe, and instead of Happy New Year, Happy Spring.